It's 9 minutes after 6 o'clock. Good morning. John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we're going to talk about the Conservation Congress in Wisconsin. It will be holding hearings in all counties of the state of Wisconsin tonight. They all start at 7 o'clock. And we have some people with us this morning who are going to help us sort through some of the issues that the Conservation Congress will be taking up and explain a little bit about how the Congress works and how it interacts with policy on natural resources in the state of Wisconsin. And I know that a lot of you are going to want to get in on this conversation, and so I will give you the phone numbers right now. Here they are, 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number, 800-642-1234. In Madison, we'd appreciate it if you'd use 263-1890, 263-1890. If you are someone who doesn't want to be on the air and would prefer to use email, you can do that too. The address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And with that preamble, allow me to introduce my guests. I have two guests this morning who will help us sort through all of these issues. First, we have Adrian Weideman, an ecologist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and manager and director of the state's Wolf Management Program. And also joining us by phone is Kurt Thiede, who is the DNR liaison with the Conservation Congress. Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for joining me this morning.
Morning, John. Morning, Kurt.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Adrian.
Kurt, let's start with you, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about the Conservation Congress, exactly what it is and what it does.
I'd be glad to. The Conservation Congress is really the only advisory body in the state where citizens of Wisconsin elect delegates to represent their interests in natural resources, both local and statewide in nature. And they work alongside and advise the Natural Resources Board and Department of Natural Resources.
And there will be 72 hearings tonight at seven o'clock. So every county in the state has a location, and they'll all be all those hearings will be at seven.
That's correct. 7 o'clock. Every county in the state. This is a very unique opportunity in the United States, where this is really the only organization like this or any event like this in North America that provides this much opportunity for citizen input into natural resource policy.
And people can find out about where these hearings are. I'm assuming that the hearings notices have been posted in local papers, but if somebody missed that, is there a website that we can get to that will show us where these hearings are and give us directions?
There is, John. They can go to the DNR website, which is dnr.wi.gov, and right under seasonal, which is a heading, they can click on spring hearings. They'll be able to see the questionnaire, all the questions in their entirety, as well as the locations.
Okay. So in the newscast that just finished, we heard Chuck Kornbach talking about one of the big issues that will be before the Conservation Congress in its spring session, which is the wolf population in Wisconsin. And I do want to talk about that, but I was looking at the agenda for in the notice of public hearings where all the lists of topics and proposed resolutions and so forth were. And there's quite a bit more in here than just talking about the wolf population.
That's correct. The evening and the way it's broken down is there's really two aspects of the spring hearings. The first part of the evening, there'll be an opportunity to vote on a variety of wildlife and fisheries management rule proposals. That is what's primarily listed in the hearing notice. In addition to that, there's an opportunity for delegates to be elected. Each county will elect two delegates to represent their constituents. And then the second half of the evening, and this is where the wolf questions on managed forest law, and many other natural resource-related questions will be presented as advisory questions.
Well, let's talk specifically about some of the issues that are going to come up tonight. I noticed that, and you know, you'll have to forgive me because I have a horrible confession to make. I'm a male from Wisconsin who doesn't hunt, fish, or trap. So I probably could be run out of the state for this. So forgive me if I ask a seemingly dumb question. I noticed that one of the issues that was on the list is to establish definitions for live trap and body gripping type trap. Could you explain what the difference is between those two?
There are, and first off, I'll say that there's no offense taken, and I think there's probably a lot of listeners out there who may not be part of the hunting, fishing, or trapping fraternity, although it is a significant aspect of our, or part of our heritage in Wisconsin. But the body gripping type trap, and what that is it's a type of trap that when used immediately dispatches the animal. There's a couple of jaws that as the animal enters the trap, the trap is made to enclose upon the body of the animal. The live trap, on the other hand, would be like a cage trap where an animal enters the trap and is not immediately dispatched.
I noticed that a lot of the proposed changes in regulations and so forth are specific to various counties in the state on different types of seasons, even the size of fish that can be caught and kept in certain areas of the state is different. For example, I noticed that there was quite a bit in here about the difference in sizes of various in various lakes of what muskies could be taken. What's the reason for doing this?
The way the fisheries establishes their rules pertaining to whether it's bag limits or size of fish taken, they really have a matrix of options depending on the lake itself, depending on the interests of those who fish the lake. And what they do is they'll take a look at extensive data from the lake, the reproduction, the health of the fishery. And they'll put that into a matrix along with the interests and desires of the public, and they'll come up with a suite of options that are available to fishery biologists. Some of it may include a larger bag limit for individuals, especially as it relates to muskies. They may be looking for more of a trophy fishery, and then there's various size limits that are available for fisheries managers to apply to a water body.
We're at weather time. We need to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion about the Conservation Congress. I'm John Munson. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Minutes past 6 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine this week. Here's what's coming up later on the Ideas Network. After 5, Ben Marin's guest discusses the history and the fortune of the Bin Laden family, which in only two generations moved from a famine-stricken canyon to luxury jets, yachts, and private compounds around the world. That's on At Issue with Ben Marins after 5 o'clock today here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're spending our time talking about the Conservation Congress hearings, which will take place around the state of Wisconsin at 7 o'clock tonight. And if you want to know more about those hearings, you can go to this website, dnr.wi.gov, and follow the link there, and you can find the Conservation Congress. Or do what I did, just Google Conservation Congress Wisconsin, and it'll pop right up. That would be another way to do it. And I have two guests with me who are helping us sort through the issues that the Conservation Congress has before it. Adrian Wideven, ecologist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and manager and director of the state's Wolf Management Program, and Kurt Thede, DNR liaison with the Conservation Congress. And we've been talking mainly with Kurt so far about the various other issues that will come before the people who show up at these hearings tonight. And of course, Adrian is here to talk specifically about perhaps one of the, it's the issue that's gotten the most publicity thus far. It's about the management of Wisconsin's wolf population, and we'll turn to that in just a moment. First, I want to give the phone numbers again, 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234 is a toll-free number that's good anywhere you can hear this broadcast, pretty much. In Madison, however, we'd like you to use our local number, which is 263-1890, 263-1890. We have an email address, talk@wpr.org. Well, Adrian, I want to turn to you and ask you about the wolf population in Wisconsin. Wolves were on the endangered species list. They were down to less than 20 animals, I believe, in the state at one time, and the wolf population has come back. And if you look at a map, the areas of northern Wisconsin have quite a few packs, so it looks like the wolf population is pretty well established. Give me an overview of what the of the state's plan for the management of the wolf population, please.
Yes, the wolf population actually completely disappeared from Wisconsin in the 1960s and early 70s, and then they returned on their own coming back from Minnesota, and the population grew from zero wolves in 1975 when I was in college to a population now of somewhere between 500 and 600 wolves. We're just completing this winter's count, so we don't know yet what the population will be this winter or what it was this winter, but we're anticipating somewhere in that 500-600 range. And our management plan is to try to manage a population somewhere above 350 wolves. That's a population goal, to have a population of at least 350 wolves outside of Indian reservations. And one of the tools that we've always indicated could be used to manage the population would be a public harvest. And so this question is addressing that issue.
And how are you envisioning that a wolf hunt would work?
If we were to have a wolf hunting season, and it could be some combination of a hunting trapping season, it would mean that it would be some sort of a quota system where a limited number of hunters or trappers would be able to apply for permits and would be able to use those permits in specific areas in northern Wisconsin. We probably wouldn't have all of the wolf range open to harvest. There'd be only specific areas where there's need to control the population where we would be issuing permits. So it'd be only a limited number of permits that would be issued. It's similar to what we do right now for our bear hunting season or for our bobcat hunting seasons, but it'd be a lot less permits than would be applied for those animals.
The wolf population is pretty much concentrated in what appears to be the northern, well, let's call it the northern third, and be generous, of the state. What would be the particular reason for that? Is it just a matter of habitat?
Wolves do best in wild areas. Our large blocks of public lands, our national forests and county forests across northern Wisconsin seem to provide the best habitat for wolves. We also have a small wolf population of a little bit less than 100 living in central Wisconsin in the area we call the Central Forest between Wisconsin Rapids and Black River Falls and up to Eau Claire. So those are the areas where we've got lots of wild land, lots of public land seem to do best as far as supporting wolves.
How are we able to track where the wolves, where the wolf population is?
We conduct surveys each winter. We have over 120 volunteers that do track surveys. We've got about a dozen DNR biologists and technicians who do snow track surveys. We have usually 30 to 50 wolves that are radio collared that we're following by DNR pilots from the air and get counts of those animals and their packs. And so a combination of radio telemetry and track surveys, and also we gather reports from the general public, people who see wolves, who see their sign in the forest. We gather those reports and use that information, combine it to come up with an estimation of the population.
How likely is it that someone who's walking around in the woods or out on a four-wheeler or whatever is likely to encounter wolves in northern Wisconsin?
On foot, it's very rare. I spend a lot of time in the northern forest myself, and I've yet to see a wolf on foot walking around. On my drive to work each morning, I drive through areas of three or four packs, and I see a wolf maybe on the average about once per year on my drive to the office. So it's quite rare to see them. It's become more frequent now than it had been 10, 20 years ago, but it's still an infrequent and uncommon event.
Now, with a lot of, in the last 20 or so years, more and more people have been moving out into the woods, so to speak, not just around lakes, but just out into wooded areas in rural northern Wisconsin. Are we having more encounters with wolves? I mean, are homeowners and so forth having problems with their with wolves taking their pets or Is that thing fairly common or not?
We are having a few situations where homeowners have had a pets attack, dogs. One or two of those kind of events occur per year, it seems like. But where we're seeing growth and depredation problems, it's mainly in depredation at farm sites. As our wolf population has filled up most of the northern forest areas, they're starting to spread into more agricultural areas, and where we're starting to see wolves spread into places such as just south of Superior, the South Range area, or southwest of Ashland, in the Mason area, we're seeing more depredation on livestock, and that's where I think we're starting to see some concerns develop over the expanding wolf population.
So if a farmer loses livestock to wolf depredation, what recourse does he or she have?
There are several possibilities. Farmers can shoot wolves in the act of attacking pets or livestock on their property and need to report those within 24 hours. They have the services of USDA Wildlife Services will come to their property, investigate potential wolf depredations, determine if wolves were involved, and if it were wolves, they can trap and remove those wolves. We had 38 wolves removed that way last year, and farmers are reimbursed at fall market value for any calves or livestock lost on the farm. So there are reimbursements. There are also non-lethal methods that are available, special flagging, scare devices that are given by Wildlife Services to farmers to help scare off wolves from their property. So there's a variety of things that are available.
We have a caller who wants to join us, and we'll invite Mike from Racine on the air this morning. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. I didn't have an opportunity to hear the first opening comment, so hopefully I don't cover the ground over again. I just want to make a comment that so often we hear discussions about the Conservation Congress right around the spring meetings and usually about deer hunting, mourning doves, or some other controversial topic. Yet Conservation Congress is also active in so many other areas of Wisconsin resources, talking about air pollution, water pollution, management of our other resources such as forestry. You know, there are so many things that the Congress is involved in and takes important positions in front of both the legislature as well as the DNR board. And I hope that we use this opportunity of the wolf story to actually talk about the other things that the Congress does, because certainly we've got enough media coverage on the wolf story.
Thanks for the call, Mike. And actually, that's why we have Kurt Thede with us this morning, is for that very purpose, is to make sure that we talk about more than just the wolf population.
And that's correct, John, and I think Mike's very accurate in his comments. The Conservation Congress and is established in the statute, which officially recognizes the Conservation Congress, that they advise the Natural Resources Board on all matters that come before the board. So there's whether it's the wolf season, whether it's another issue that's gotten a lot of attention on the spring hearing that relates to managed forest law. These are perfect examples of different issues that the Congress deals
with. We'll pick that up on the other side of the news. We have to go and catch the news, and then we'll be back with more discussion about the Conservation Congress. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network. It's 6:35. Good morning. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week. This hour, we're talking about the upcoming hearings at 7 o'clock tonight in all 72 Wisconsin counties of the Conservation Congress. And there are a lot of issues that the Congress will take up, including the wolf population, and we have been talking about that and about the other things that the Conservation Congress works on. My two guests are Adrian Wideven, ecologist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and manager and director of the state's Wolf Management Program, and Kurt Thede, who is the DNR liaison with the Conservation Congress. And Kurt, I'm sorry I had to cut you off there before the news. Did you have anything else you wanted to respond to our caller with?
No problem, John. And I guess the only thing I would add is that I know a lot of individuals see the Conservation Congress associated solely with the spring hearings because it is the most public event associated with the Congress. But as Mike points out, throughout the entire calendar year, the Congress is involved in a lot of issues, everything from the Great Lakes Compact to mercury air rules. to the way that the forestry programs and park programs are managed in the state. So it's a year-round process, but we definitely see the spring hearings, as most folks do, as the kind of the flagship of the Congress.
So how does the Congress function in the rest of the year? I mean, are there individuals who are representatives of this organization who speak to these issues during the year?
As I mentioned, delegates are elected at the spring hearings, as well as vote, as well as the public's opportunity to weigh in on these questions. There are five delegates per county in the state, so we have a delegation of 360 individuals who, what they will do, their first goal is to take a look at the results from the spring hearings, the advisory questions, and they'll vote on those questions and the results of those questions at their May meeting, at their annual convention. Once those they've had a chance to vote and make those the official position of the Congress, those positions are shared with the Natural Resources Board. Now, the one other aspect of the spring hearings that I didn't mention yet, and that's the citizen resolution portion of the evening. At the end of the evening, anyone who has an issue as it relates to natural resources can stand up, introduce their idea, and then have that idea voted on by the individuals in that county. The results are then advanced to a Congress study committee, of which there are 24, and that's really what they do throughout the next year, is those study committees review those resolutions, and there's the potential for those resolutions then to become Congress advisory questions the following year.
Well, you must have been looking at my list of questions, because one of the things I had down was whether or not people could bring up issues that weren't on the notice, and you answered it already. One thing I didn't do when we started this segment is give the phone number, so let me correct that mistake, and we'll move on. 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number, 800-642-1234. In Madison, it's a local call for you, so please use 263-1890, 263-1890. The email address is talk@wpr.org. We have another caller, another fellow named Mike, who wants to talk to us. This one's from Madison. Mike, good morning.
Good morning. I'd like the guest to respond to the question of whether what the Conservation Congress has been advising the DNR concerning the important issue of greenhouse gases and global warming. I worked for the DNR actually a few years ago, and I essentially got told to not say anything about the issue at all, or under threat of being disciplined. I eventually left the DNR for that reason.
So, does the Congress take a position on greenhouse gases?
The issue of greenhouse gases, if it would be taken up by the Congress's Air, Waste, and Water Study Committee. This past year, some of the issues that they've been dealing with are mercury emissions from coal-fired power plants, the Great Lakes Compact, and a variety of other issues. But if it's specifically as it relates to greenhouse gases and global warming, at this point the Congress hasn't developed a position. However, that's a perfect example that Mike identified as something that he could bring up, or any other individual could bring up, at their spring hearing. And if it receives support within that county, that will, in all likelihood, be advanced to the Air, Waste, and Water Committee, and that's how positions of the Congress originate.
Give me an example, Kurt, of an issue that's been generated from the Conservation Congress that has had a direct effect on eventually on state policy as far as natural resources.
The one issue that I like to use as an example is a resolution that was introduced in Marathon County in 2003, and I think the listeners who are turkey hunters will know that there's been some recent issues that have brought this to the forefront again. But it related to how turkey permits are issued after the initial drawing for permits. And what the individual identified in his resolution was that they should take the leftover permits and sell those on a first-come or over-the-counter basis for folks that may not have received one initially. That was voted on, supported in Marathon County. It was on the Congress side of the questionnaire the following year in 2004 and was incorporated into the state budget the following year. that now generates a great deal of revenue for the department, and it's really an opportunity for hunters who missed out on the initial drawing to get an additional permit. So there's just one example where one person's idea in one county of the state and affected state policy.
Let's take a call next from Tom in Port Wing. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. Hello, hello.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
I have a couple questions. Number one is the meetings are quite lengthy because of all the questions. Do we have the right to change the order of the meeting? Can we ask that we start at question 50 first and go through it?
The response to that is, as far as the meeting structure goes, that is pretty much well set. We start at question one and work through the questionnaire. The option that has been presented for individuals who may only be able to stick around for 5 minutes or 20 minutes is that we have gone to statewide balloting across the state, and what that means is you can show up, you'll be presented with a ballot, you can vote on all of the questions of interest to you. If it's just one question, you can vote on that one question and turn in your ballot and be on your way, and your opinion will be recorded and included in the statewide tally. So that's one thing we've done in response to individuals who just don't have the time to spend 3 or 4 hours waiting for their question to come up.
Can I ask another question?
Go ahead.
The second question, is there any consideration for having two meetings? And what I mean is where you have maybe the fall would deal with the fishing regulations and the spring would deal with the hunting. And my reason for asking that, again, is the meetings are very lengthy and you don't have questions. It's really nice to get answers from the people up front, the DNR, about why things are happening. I guess I'm just suggesting that we have two meetings versus one.
To my knowledge, that hasn't been discussed, but I definitely appreciate the idea, and it's something that we can, it's all about an adaptive approach to these, and if there's things that we can do, just like the balloting, that we can do to improve things, we'll definitely take a look at it.
Thanks for that call, Tom. We're just about at weather time, so I don't want to take another question right now or get into another topic. But I do want to let people know that we have a line available if you'd like to call in, and here are the numbers, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. If you have a question about the Conservation Congress, the topics that it takes up and the things that it does, the way that it impacts natural resources policy in the state, this is your hour, because we have a couple of experts here who can answer your questions about this organization and what it's doing. If you're interested particularly in what's going on with the wolf population, Adrian Weideman can answer your questions about that, and Kurt Thiede is here to answer more general questions about state natural resources policy as it comes from the Conservation Congress. 800-642-1234 is the toll-free number that you can use to reach the program. In Madison, though, we'd like you to use our local number, 263-1890, 263-1890. And we also have an email address, talk@wpr.org. What do you think about natural resources policy? Have you ever been to a Conservation Congress meeting? Would you recommend that other people go? Call in and let us know what your opinion is. We'd be glad to hear from you this morning. We'll take a break. We'll check the weather around the state of Wisconsin, and we'll be right back with more of our discussion about the Conservation Congress. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 647, you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, next hour, we'll continue our kind of natural resources theme here for the first 2 hours of the program, and we'll be talking about the Great Lakes Compact and what it means for the state and the region. Chuck Quirnbach, Wisconsin Public Radio's environmental reporter, will be joining me, and then Peter Annan, a veteran environmental journalist and author of The Great Lakes Water Wars, will also be with me in the 7 o'clock hour. So this is kind of a, and then on, after 8, we talk about sustainability. So this is sort of a natural resources rich morning here on the Ideas Network. We're going to go back to the phones, and let's take a call next from Joyce in Madison. And Joyce, I think you have a question for Adrian Weideman. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. My question involves the penalty actually leveled or doled out to persons who have killed a wolf in Wisconsin while it was under protection. There have been several cases I've heard of. The one that comes to mind is the gentleman who was turkey hunting, saw what he thought was a coyote, shot it, turned out to be a wolf. Can you say what actually happens when a person illegally shoots a wolf under protection, please?
The type of penalties will vary depending on whether the person was intentionally killing a wolf, or if it was done accidentally or inadvertently. And in the case of people who shoot wolves and turn themselves in, generally about a $300 fine is applied. It's $306, something like that. If a person shoots a wolf illegally but doesn't report it, fines can be $2,000 or more. And if there's an intentional killing, the fines could be several thousand dollars more. Generally, the $2,000 fine would be about the highest fines that we've levied against people who've shot wolves.
Thanks for the call, Joyce. Let's go next to Jim in River Falls. Jim, good morning.
Good morning. I had a question about groundwater and feedlots and how they affect it. And my understanding is now that the current Wisconsin law, it's a statewide regulation that cities or towns or counties can't regulate siting of feedlots at this point in time. And I'm wondering if something like about that could be brought up at one of these meetings to give local communities the right to regulate siting of feedlots in these manure lagoons.
Jim, the topic that you brought up is definitely a type of issue that could be brought forward at the spring hearings. The Congress website, the same web address that we've given earlier for spring hearings, also has guidance on how to write a resolution. There's some guidelines. We ask that it be no more than 250 words, that it lay out what the issues are, and then also the your proposed solution to the issue. And then introduce that. Bring two copies with you, and that's the basics of how to write and introduce a resolution. But like I say, there's more information for you to take a look at on our website.
Jim, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Joe and Mellon. Joe, good morning.
Good morning. My question is about the bear preference points. I'm a bear guy here in northern Wisconsin. I've talked to a lot of different people, and I guess one of the issues was you had 85,000 applicants this year for 4,600 tags. Going at that rate, the people further down the line, you're looking at a 12 or 13 year waiting period to get a bear tag in Wisconsin. And one of the ideas I wanted to bring across and maybe have some people think about it today is instead of actually an older person getting their harvest tag and turning it over to a youth, from my understanding, if they were to do that, the youth actually can retain their preference points. They do not lose them, go back to zero. My idea was if people wanted the younger people to go bear hunting, is to actually, if they were to receive some points, the older person along with the younger person, combine them to reach a certain level of preference points, you're virtually eliminating two people for every one of them tags that are going out, and I'll get my comment off the air. Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
Joe, another good an example of the type of thing to bring up. I believe the original proposal to allow individuals to transfer their harvest tags did originate as a Congress advisory or as a resolution. There have been some questions just this past year as it relates to other preference points, as it relates to being able to transfer just about any special permit to a youth, and also the ability to apply for points only when it comes to bobcats. Those two ideas were signed into law by the governor this past this spring, and those are another couple of examples of ideas that came forward as citizen proposals, were voted on as Congress advisory questions, and eventually became policy.
Well, let's take another call. This time we'll go to Jill in Manitowish Waters. Good morning, Jill.
Hi. Hey, I was wondering, why doesn't the DNR ban feeding of deer in my area in Vilas County? Every store has a mound of corn outside, and we've had deer sighting or wolf sightings in a populated neighborhood multiple times, and this is only going to bring people in conflict with the wolves. I want to see the wolves saved, and they're coming in to feed on the deer that are congregating in populated areas. It makes no sense to me. Thank you.
That is one of the problems that occurs when people feed wildlife, feed deer, that it does concentrate them, and that does increase the risk of conflict with wolves, because if deer are highly concentrated, those are the places that wolves go to hunt. And there is a question on the spring hearings about banning of feeding, and Kurt might want to talk more about that, but that is a concern that when you feed deer, that it does concentrate the deer and possibly bring in wolves.
That's right, Adrian, and as Adrian mentioned, there is a question this year. Folks will have an opportunity to weigh in on that very subject. The one issue they'll just mention in relation to Jill's question is that she'd mentioned that the DNR should ban baiting and feeding of deer. The DNR's position is that the baiting and feeding of deer should be prohibited, but it's a legislative issue. And that's why the question that's presented on the spring hearings this year is worded such that it is that would you support legislation that would create a prohibition on deer baiting and feeding?
Let's take another quick call. We'll go to Kurt in Springbrook. Kurt, thank you for calling.
Yeah, I'm a hunter, and I have a hunting dog. And as a result, I do a lot of reading of sportsmen's magazines. And it seems like the big issue is around killing wolves is always either the hunting dogs or livestock depredation. But one thing I never hear come up around in the conversation around shooting wolves is you never hear about respecting their territory. You never hear about if you're going to hunt in their territory or establish a livestock corral in their territory, that the consequences might be of losing an animal. And shouldn't that be just a consequence, and why is there not a justification of shooting wolves?
Adrian, we have about a minute and a half left.
Yes, one of the questions is whether people should be able to shoot wolves in the act of attacking pets or livestock on public land. And Kurt points out a good point that the public lands are places where we want to support wolf populations, and we haven't really seen situations where people could have shot wolves and defended pets, so those kind of attacks on public lands generally occur some distance from the hunter. We've seen that on private lands where wolves have attacked pets and livestock, and it's a good law to have, but on public lands we don't feel that it's necessary to have liberal laws for shooting wolves. So yeah, that's part of it, is you are on the wolf's territory.
What about, do problem wolves get relocated anyplace, or are they just euthanized?
They are euthanized. We did used to translocate them, but now most of our suitable wolf habitat is occupied. We really don't have places to put wolves anymore, so that's the most humane thing to do with problem wolves at this point.
We're in the last minute or so of the program. Kurt, any thoughts as we close here, things you'd like to encourage people to do tonight at the hearings?
I think the biggest thing is just to show up. Find out where the hearing is in your county. Show up. Vote. If it's your first time at the hearings, we've provided a one-page kind of primer to the spring hearings. You can look over to get a figure out how the evening is run. And if you have some ideas, by all means, bring those forward as part of citizen resolutions. It's a great opportunity you have.
And tell us how to find that on the web one more time.
You can go to dnr.wi.gov, and right on the front page there you'll find under seasonal, it'll say Conservation Congress Spring Hearings.
Or you can do what I did and just Google Conservation Congress Wisconsin, and that probably will get you there as well. Thank you both for joining me this morning. It's been an interesting hour.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
Adrian Wideven, ecologist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and manager and director of the state's Wolf Management Program, and Kurt Thiede, DNR liaison with the Conservation Congress. This program was produced by Karen Prager, who also handled on-air production chores along with Cheryl Gasser. If you'd like a copy of the program, you can call the radio store at 800-747-7444 and ask for program 414A. Or you can go to WPR.org and listen to it all over again on the Internet. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.